Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to The Darker Side of Romance. I'm your host, Rhonda Caudill, and I would like to welcome back MD Martin tonight, writer and publisher. Hi, MD. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Rhonda. My pen name is MD Martin, and I write two different genres. I write horror. The series is Legends of Williams Point. And I also write romantic comedy, and that series is Lola Avocado. And currently, all of the titles are published with Dark Hollows Press.
And have recently branched out a little bit. Tell us about your new endeavor.
I have. I have started my own press. It is called Wolf Hills Press, LLC. It really hasn't taken off a lot yet because I literally just started it a few weeks ago. So I just decided to take the plunge and create my own publishing company.
What made you decide to do that?
You did.
Oh, I'm inspirational to somebody.
I blame it all on you. Actually, I mean, you're an inspiration for me when it comes to that. I mean, you have your own Full Moon publishing, and you've been doing great with it, and I thought, you know, now is the time for me to take the next step.
Well, and tonight, I thought we would change gears a little. We usually do writer-to-writer topics, but mm-hmm. tonight I thought we would chat publisher to publisher. So, in those terms, keeping that in mind, like you said, you felt like it was your time to branch out. It seems, well, to me, there was a time where, okay, I'm self-publishing, so my obvious next step would to be independent publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that kind of the way you felt? This is my obvious next step?
I think so. I mean, I think it's just as you write, your career evolves, and you either become, you know, you stay indie publisher, indie writer, or you get picked up by one of what the big five now, because there's not even six of them anymore, publishing houses.
Right.
Or you do a hybrid and you publish with a press and keep part of your works to yourself and publish independently, or you decide to finally just take the plunge and create your own company and go from there. And you can either help other authors along the way with their journey, or you can just publish your own works under your own masthead.
Right. And that was my original thought when I formed a company. I would just publish my own stuff, but then afterthought was, well, you see so many struggling authors trying to get picked up, and, you know, it's just like, well, I have a company. I'm interested in these authors, so why mm-hmm. not go ahead and look at some work and see if there's anything you like that you think you would be interested in publishing, which is kind of what I did. Do you think that you will only publish yours, or do you think you're going to branch out and take on other authors?
I think I may at some point in time branch out. I would definitely With Wolf Hills, I think I would want to branch out into the horror genre because that's going to be the primary focus of my publications, of my press.
Right.
Will be horror stories because, oddly enough, that seems to be the one area that's the hardest to get into is, and especially, and I'm not trying to sound sexist, so please don't take it that way, but especially for female writers, that's the reason I go by M.D. Martin because, my first name really doesn't sound scary. And horror has typically always been a male-dominated genre.
Right.
So I would love to help other horror story authors.
And not to be sexist, but it would be great to help some of those females along.
Absolutely, absolutely. We all just need to help each other out. So. But yeah, I'm not gonna say I'll only take female submissions. No, that would not be right. I would take submissions from anyone that wants to write horror. So there you go.
Now, would you look at primarily unpublished authors, or would you look at a mix? What I found is most of my authors have been unpublished. They come to me fresh. However, there are a couple who have self-published.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a couple that have published through another press. But
mm-hmm.
but what they brought me was a different series. So what would you look at in terms, or would you just take anything? Are you looking for anything specific, do you think? Or would you look? Or would you just think, hey, if it's good, I'll take it?
Well, I wouldn't turn anyone away. I would want to work primarily with new authors. That way I could help them to learn the process even more. Yeah.
Right.
In my other daytime career, my 9-to-5 job, I'm used to helping the clients to learn how to do specific things. I work in the print industry, in a facet of the print industry. So I would really, like to help teach them and help them grow in their craft and realize their own potential. So,
well,
and I only have 3 classes left until I have my master's degree, so yay. And then I'll actually have a master's for teaching.
And you'll be so glad to finish.
Yes, I will be. I'm being crazy and thinking about the doctoral degree, but I don't know if I've got it in me to go another, 3 to 4 more years.
Yeah, there's a reason they call it a terminal degree. Trust me. I was getting pre-terminal by the time it was over. Ricky asked me, last night he said, would you do it again? And I said, if I knew what I knew then, hell no. I felt a sense of accomplishment, but I'll never do another one.
Yeah, I know. I keep going, I want it, but do I want it bad enough? And the thing is, I am not sure that, I mean, would I like the PhD after my initials? Heck yeah. But I think I'm going to take some time off, and then if I'm crazy, I might do it. But I think I need to shift my focus back to writing and not so much the technical writing I've been doing lately for
it
school.
Sucks,
so
it sucks the creativity out, doesn't it?
It does. Let me
it's
just
really,
tell you.
It's really hard to write if you're actually, doing technical writing for classes. But if you have a creative writing class, it's great, it flows, but there's something, and you don't have the time either.
Exactly. You wind up feeling like you're cheating something.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
it's the thing that I want to, at some point in time make my career. So, yeah.
So, okay, we've determined that you would not exclude anybody, but you would primarily focus on unpublished authors. And this is all hypothetical because you're concentrating on you right now, but hey, you never know.
Well, you never know.
The perfect manuscript may come in your lap and, you know, just fall into your lap and you're like, hey, I have to do this. So, what would you look for in an author other than, you know, you said you'd look at anybody, but primarily you'd probably focus on new authors. But what would you look for, you know, as far as your writing style or, you know?
First off, I would look for flexibility because in your writing, whether it's personal writing or you're helping another author, you need to be flexible, especially when it comes to editing. You can't be married to your work and be too stubborn to realize that through the editing process, you're just making it better. You're not losing sight of what you want and your goals, but to make it palatable for everyone else that you want to read this story, you have to be able to be flexible enough to accept revisions.
Critique. Critique from someone else that, you know, helpful critiquing, which is what comes from editing, because the editor is saying, I think from reading it from a reader's point of view, because you're reading it from the writer's point of view, and you already know, because there was so much when my projects go through editing, I'm like, but that's what I meant, but that's not what I said. But I read it so much that I knew the story, even though, and because I wrote it, even though it wasn't actually written, I knew what was implied. The reader didn't know. The editor picked that up. So, yeah, you've got to be able to take, you know, the editor's critiquing and their suggestions.
Exactly. I mean, and realize that it's not someone picking on you. It's someone trying to say, is this what you meant? Because this is what it sounded like.
Any
editor is not, they're just trying to help you make it better. So it's, that's one of the big things. Another thing would be having a clearly defined writing voice. And I know a lot of people, myself included, every time someone would say, you know, find your voice, I was always like, what do you mean? What does find your voice mean? It means having a clearly defined writing style. Like, some of my works, a lot of my short stories are told from first person. Now, if you were to pick mine up versus someone else's, you could see what my writing style is. I can't necessarily tell you what my writing style is, but if I compare mine to someone else, then I can literally, you know, I can pick out my work, even if something that I wrote years ago and completely forgot about, which is not unusual. I'll pick something up and be like, wow, I wrote that? What was I thinking at that time? But, yeah, you have to be able to step back and read your own work objectively. And the more you write, the more developed your voice becomes.
Oh, yes.
So
you want flexibility and a clear, true writing voice, true to the
author. Yeah, don't try to write like me. Don't try to write like Rhonda. Write like yourself and put yourself, your heart, and your soul into it so that I can see you and what you are saying, not what, you know, the Wes Cravens and Stephen Kings of the world are saying, what the actual author themselves are saying.
Right. And I think too many people try to mimic other authors because these authors sell, but
yeah.
you can't mimic it, because like you say, it's not true to yourself, so it's not going to be
exactly. I mean, yeah, they have formulas. There are formula stories. Romances follow a formula. Don't ask me what they are, because I can never seem to get it right. But I don't want a formula story. I don't want something cookie cutter that, you know, you can just change out names and dates and clothes and have five different stories.
Yeah,
that
I agree.
I don't like that, because I'm still basically reading the same story every time. It's
right.
Just, you know, names and dates have been changed to protect the innocent kind of thing. I don't want that. I want something new and fresh and, yeah.
That's
scare
me.
Me.
That's,
I want
that's,
you to scare me.
If somebody can scare you, you definitely need to publish them, because that's saying something.
Yes, because I had this conversation with my mom the other day. We were talking about that, and I was like, you know, there's only been one story I've ever written that I pulled punches on because I scared my own self.
That's funny. It was a
and
scary story then.
It was. And she told me, she said, I want you to rewrite the story, but with the scary parts in it. And I was like, okay. But, yeah, there has only been one story I have written that I had to pull the punches because I was going so deep down the rabbit hole I even scared myself. So, and yeah,
what
like you said, that's saying something.
What was the story, just out of curiosity?
That was Resurrection. I pulled
okay.
back on some of it. But,
and you didn't put it back in?
Not
you
yet, but you know.
You could probably do another version and put it back in.
It probably will be, and it may actually get turned into a full-length book at that point. Who knows? So,
okay.
I know that right now I'm working on the full-length novel of The Hybrid's Daughter,
mm-hmm.
because in the anthologies, you have her short story of how she came to be with her dad, but now I'm actually working on the full-length novel of when they get to Williams Point.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The Williams Point series, I see this exploding into something phenomenal, because you started out with short stories that you thought you might put into a collection, but each one of these short stories, even though they went into a collection, they're branching out and they're becoming full-length novels themselves.
They are. They're kind of taking over.
It's taking a life of its own.
It is.
So I look forward to reading more, because I've read a lot of Williams Point, and I look forward to reading more, because it's very interesting and very dark.
Very, yeah, it can be. I know that I've had some people tell me that they can't read it unless they read it in the daytime, and I'm like, are you serious? And they're like, yes, because it terrifies them to death. And now, you know, I wrote it. I don't think it's scary, but a lot of people have told me that they do, so I don't know what that says about me. But
well, and Mad Harriet was not, it was scary, but it was twisted. It was more what she was capable of that frightened me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's that you delve into the darkness of the soul and see what someone's capable of. That's what's scary.
I find, and you know, that's one of the things I find interesting. I enjoy the psychological aspects of it. What, at deep down, what are humans capable of doing?
Right.
And they can be capable of some of the most atrocious acts, or some of the best things in the world. I mean, we
mm-hmm.
all have it in us. It's the yin,
the yin
and the yang.
Yeah, the yin and the yang. You can't have the black and without the white, or the white without the black. You have to have, you know, the positive and the negative. It's both.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
You're right. A psychology class would probably do a horror writer really good.
Oh, trust me. I had to actually take a psychology class, and I was just like, oh, this is so fabulous.
You probably
I think
terrified the instructor, though.
I well, you know, I did come up with some very interesting papers. And then for my bachelor's in English, we were writing papers on Follow the House of Usher.
Oh,
and
it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I had to pick the Poe stories. And then I also wrote one on Porphyria's Lover. Love that poem. Absolutely love that poem. And yeah, in that paper I talked about how, you know, if you did actual criminal profiling, that could have been a budding serial killer right there. And my professor was just like, oh my gosh, I had never thought of it that way. So, you know, it's good to be a creative writing and a creative writer and an English major all at the same time, because you can look back at like Poe and stuff like that and really get different meanings out of them.
Oh yes, yes, I totally agree. You look at it a different way. When you're just reading it, and then if you read it later for, like you say, a creative writing class or even a psychology class, you read it in a different, at it, in, you know, in a different perspective. Hey, I'm going to look at it this way. Yeah, it totally makes you look at things differently, and you get different meanings from the writing.
Absolutely, absolutely. So. And, I mean, if you're ever stuck for ideas, don't rip off the writers. Please, never do that. But go back and read some of the older stuff like The Yellow Wallpaper and read it from a psychological viewpoint of this poor woman going insane, and just really start to ask yourself, what if a character was put in this situation and this happened? Or, you know, something else. Again, don't take their idea, but just start morphing ideas off of it until you've created your own.
Right.
I love to go back and read the classics because there are so many things in them that you can go, oh my gosh, I didn't get that
well,
the first time I ever read it.
And they are the basis for modern day literature.
Absolutely.
So if you go back, like you said, you can morph off, you look at it in a different light, but then you can morph off of their idea and just change it completely and make it fit a modern day, like you said, a budding serial killer. You know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look what they've done with the Sherlock series.
Yes, yeah. I know.
I love how they've taken Sherlock and brought him into modern-day London.
And Watson.
And, yeah. it's fabulous because now they can actually apply, you know, DNA sequencing and forensics, modern forensics and stuff to this. And they're still true to the original Arthur Conan Doyle, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle viewpoint,
but with a modern twist.
They're putting their own modern twist on it. And the same thing goes, what if you take something that's happening now and throw it back into the past?
Oh, yeah.
You have
totally
to take
changing.
Away some things. Yeah.
Right.
So
yeah.
Just be open to the fact that ideas can come in all shapes and sizes, and you just never know where they're going to come from.
I mean, horror writers could take anything from the news today and, like you said, put a twist on it and throw it back in time and make a wonderful horror story of a modern-day crime.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, look what you did with Jack the Ripper.
Well, it was actually Nikita's idea.
Still,
who Jack
you
the
wrote
Ripper
it.
Was, but, yeah.
You wrote it, but You did a great job on the Lizzie Borden book.
Well, thank you.
Your
I wanted
music
to
box.
Put a different I wanted to put a different twist on the same old, same old.
Mm-hmm.
And have, you know, I'm actually thinking about a sequel to the Lizzie Borden, to the Music Box Murders, actually.
You
modern
should.
Day. Modern day. Her descendants are
going to
be faced
say,
with the same problem.
I was going to say, does it run in the blood genetically? Who
yes.
knows?
Yes.
So,
oh.
see? Wonderful.
But we think alike.
Wonderful thing. I love it. I love a story that I can sink my teeth into.
Oh, you will do.
And, yeah, if you can catch me and you can hold me, then you've got me. And you've got a reader for life.
I agree. If I read something that it's like, okay, at the beginning, but, you know, it's really good in the middle and the end, you know, it's okay. But, I mean, if you grab me from the beginning and you hold me all the way through, I'll read everything you put out.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because you
Unless
know
Unless you start falling into a formula.
Oh, yeah. And I agree with you that I don't know. I don't like the formula thing. And when I'm looking at authors, I look for flexibility, and I look
mm-hmm.
for their voice, a true voice.
Mm-hmm.
I also look
mm-hmm.
for uniqueness. Has this been done to death? Oh, no, this
yes.
is brand new. Yeah, this is something unique. So I agree. If you fall into that writing formula trap, I don't want it because it's not, you know, I want unique. I want
yeah.
something that
and,
has not been done to death.
And don't cheat me on the ending. If the ending is supposed to suck, and I mean like suck your will and say, oh my God, I can't believe you did that to all those characters, then let it happen.
And
but
you're
don't
try You're the professional at that. Oh my God, so many characters that you have killed in terrible ways. And like, oh my God. But you're right. It had to end badly.
Yeah.
Don't put a fairy tale ending on something that
no.
is going in that, you know, going in a bad direction. You know it's not going to end well, but and then you wrap it up in a little bow with a fairy tale ending. Don't do that to me.
Yeah.
You're right.
No,
I would
do not
see
do
a
that.
Bad ending.
Yeah. Because you know what? Even if it's a bad ending and I hate it, I'm going to know that it was justified. If
yeah,
you lead me up to that point, if you lead me up to that point and then you back off, then I know you're a coward and you like your characters so much that
but you can't kill them.
You can't hurt them.
Yeah, I agree. You're not true to the story. You're not true to the characters if you, you know, kind of fizzle out
yeah.
at the end. Yeah.
I mean, if you're leading up to a battle, there better be a battle.
And somebody has to die.
Yeah.
Terrible death.
Because they can't all be in a battle and then just shake hands and say, oops, sorry, we've changed our mind.
No,
no,
it cannot be
work.
That way. And
that does not work
that.
For me.
Prime example of that, have you watched Game of Thrones?
No, I have not, and
oh.
I haven't read any of them. Although I understand that George R.R. Martin is not afraid to kill characters.
He kills everybody. Oh, my God. You fall in love with the character. And the next thing you know, they're dead. You're like, oh, my God, I didn't see that coming. I can't believe they did that. They kill, you know, they kill so many characters. I'm like, oh, my God, there's hardly anybody left.
They have to
for the story. They have to die. They can't, you know,
yeah.
everybody can't live happily ever after. There has to be tragedy. There has to be loss to propel the story forward. That's what's propelling everything forward. Is this battle for the, you know, ultimate throne. So yeah, you've got to kill people sometimes. I'm sorry, but that has to happen in literature.
It has to. Well, and even if in the world you create, they can be brought back, because, you know, I have brought back some characters that I've offed. Then you have to know that character is not going to be the same as they were before.
Right, because we all know if you come back from the dead, you're
the
not
rules
coming
have
back
changed.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
The rules have changed. So, you know, you may have loved that character, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to love everything they do if they come back.
Right.
And you have to be able to justify why you brought them back.
Right.
And you can't just say, oh, they were in a coma and they woke up. That's cheating.
Yeah, that don't work. Yeah, that is the biggest cheat.
You can't use the whole dream sequence because that will get you booed out by a lot of readers.
Mm-hmm.
They don't believe that. No.
Yeah, it's like I wasted my time for this. It was all a dream. Why?
Yeah. Now you want to tick off your audience right there is the best way to do it.
Along with
wrapping it up in a big red bow.
I agree.
So,
okay,
those are cheating.
So we've talked about what we look for in authors, what kind of authors, kind of genres. So one last point I would like to touch on is I'm going to say it, I'm going to tell you how I feel, and you tell me if you feel the same way.
Okay.
I, as an author, know what, like the editing, you know, you can't be married to your story. You have to be able to be, you know, let me, you know, change this, delete that, you know, to make it a better story. I understand that as an author. So I understand how people will get hung up on their work. And so I can coax them through it. Hey, it's going to look so much better this way. It doesn't read, you know, it coaxes them through it. So we've been authors. We've been there. We know how to guide them through certain aspects. And we feel their pain, you know, when it comes to editing and covers. You know, they want a specific cover. Well, you know, I just don't think that's going to be good on books. Whereas big companies, this is the editing we're doing. This is the cover you're getting. This is the price we're putting on it. For me as an author, I understand where the author's coming from. So I think as a small press and us being authors first, we can relate better to the author and coax them through and guide them through tough spots that I don't think you would get through a larger company. How do you feel about that?
I agree with you on that because ultimately, in a way, what you're doing is you're teaching them how to become their own publisher. I mean, would I want them to stay with me? Absolutely. But if at some point they decided, like we did, to start their own publishing company, this way they've learned. You've learned the correct way to format a cover. You've learned the correct way to format a book. You know that you don't try to tell the entire story on your cover because then that looks cluttered.
Right.
You don't want it to look so busy that somebody's eye just has nowhere to land. You want them to see a specific, and there is a golden rule to how a cover should be created. You know, there's a V pattern that you're supposed to use with a focal point so that your eyes flow the right way. Those are all specifics. You don't want to try to take an entire chapter and put it as the image on your book.
Right.
Because then the person picking it up is going to say, well, by golly, that better be somewhere in that book.
Yeah, and if it's not, uh-oh.
Exactly. They're going to be like, well, what did the cover have to do with the book?
Yeah, and I have read books like that. I've picked up a cover and thought, oh, my God, this would be an amazing book. Read the back. Oh, it seems like a good book, but it really doesn't match the cover. But, you know, I'm going to read it anyway. And then you're like, okay, it had nothing to do with the cover. The cover was splendid. The book is okay. But I agree. And two, they're not only learning the correct formatting, the correct, you know, book cover designs, all this, they're also learning how to treat their authors if they should branch off. Treat their authors like pupils. You're teaching someone else.
Yeah. And, I mean, there is nothing wrong with teaching someone. As a matter of fact, as writers, we should always be open to asking questions. If you meet somebody that has this information that you don't have, ask them. it's all part of networking, because most people that are experts in a field are more than happy to share that knowledge. You just
they
have to be
are.
willing to be a recipient of it.
Yeah, and they're very flattered that you think highly enough of them that you would ask. So they're very receptive to giving their expertise to someone. And usually they'll give you way more than you ask for, but that's okay, because it may be something you needed and just didn't know you needed. So
absolutely.
I agree. And you're right, it is all about networking. I mean, author to author, publisher to publisher, publisher to author, publisher, a whole nine yards. It's all a huge, big family. And most authors will share, and I think most small press publishers will share.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it's just, it's a way of paying it forward.
I agree.
You're creating an opportunity for somebody else to get their voice heard,
right,
along with yourself. So
I totally agree. Well, Misty, I had wanted to touch base on so much more. So I see now you're going to have to come back in a few months, and we're going to have to talk about some more. Publisher to publisher, you know, it's going to have to be another publisher to publisher chat, because with the surface, I thought we could get more in, but there's too much. So, I would like to.
Well, we're talkers.
Yeah.
We're talkers.
Yeah. So I'd like to invite you back, you know, in the future, maybe March or April, and see what's going on. I'm sure that the our listeners would enjoy another chat on publishing. I would like to thank you for coming tonight. I really appreciate it. As always, it's been a pleasure. I would like to thank everyone who tuned in to listen, or who will listen in the future. And, of course, I would like to thank Michelle Cormall-Jordan, because without her, the show would not exist. And I'll just tell everyone good night and talk to you next month. Goodbye.
Bye.